Hello friends, we are now going to see chapter 2 of the Negotiable Instruments Act. In this chapter, we are going to see as to who are the people who are eligible to execute the negotiable instruments. Who can execute, who cannot execute. This is what we are going to see in this chapter. See, a negotiable instrument is a document which is signed by a person and he gives directions to somebody else to make the payment to someone else. And in this direction, in this order, in this instruction, he says that if so and so does not pay, I will be responsible. So here it is actually a contract. It is a contract between the maker of the instrument, the person to whom it is directed, and the person who is going to receive the benefit of the negotiable instrument. So since it is a contract, all the laws pertaining to Indian Contract Act will come into play in the negotiable instrument making. So first thing, a negotiable instrument can be made only by those who are eligible to enter into a contract. See, any person who is capable of entering into a contract and any person who can bind himself to a contract, he can make, draw or accept or negotiate or transfer a negotiable instrument. As per Negotiable Instrument Act, Section 27, it also says that a person who is eligible to contract, he can request a duly authorized agent of his. If he can enter into a contract, his agent can also do this work on his behalf. So, a person who is eligible to enter into a contract can make, draw, sign, accept, negotiate, transfer a negotiable instrument. A person who is appointed by him, a duly authorized agent, he can also enter into such a contract and he can also draw, accept and negotiate the instrument. The agent is doing this on behalf of the principal. This clearly indicates that, you know, any person who is not capable of entering into a contract cannot execute a negotiable instrument. So it's very clear that a person who is eligible to enter into a contract can make, draw and sign negotiable instruments. A person who is not capable of entering into a contract cannot execute negotiable instruments. Now let us go into the detail as to who are these people who can enter into the contract, who cannot enter into the contract. The first one, a minor. As per Indian Majority Act, a person is a minor till he completes the age of 18. If there is a guardian appointed by the court, then that person becomes a major only when he completes the age of 21. So, the person who is not completed the age of 18 or who has not completed the age of 21, where a court guardian is appointed, they are not eligible to enter into a contract as per the Indian Contract Act. Now, when the Indian Contract Act says that a minor, according to these definitions, cannot enter into a contract, obviously he cannot sign a negotiable instrument. So a minor is not eligible to execute a negotiable instrument. Okay? They cannot enter into a contract, so they cannot execute the instruments. And not only that, you know, these contracts, a bill of exchange, a promissory note, a check, all these instruments, the negotiable instruments, they are all related to money. Any money transaction, give and take. If these instruments are to be signed by a minor, it is definitely going to affect his financial status. As per the Indian Majority Act, it is presumed that a minor till he attains the age of majority is not capable of understanding the consequences of such acts or any contract. That is why, in his own interest, the minor is debarred from entering into a contract. Now, when it comes to negotiable instruments where money is involved, it is all the more harmful if a minor is allowed to execute a negotiable instrument. If a minor is allowed to sign a bill of exchange, and if there is a problem on a future date, he will be answerable to all the parties involved and he will be pulled to the court of law. Do you think that a minor can defend himself in the court? He is too premature or immature to understand the consequences. That is why, for the benefit of the minor, we say that minor should not and cannot execute any negotiable instrument. If by chance he does execute the negotiable instrument, that instrument is to be treated as null and void. It is not effective. It has no relevance in law. Not only that, you know, the minor, if by chance he does execute a negotiable instrument and he says, okay, today I am a minor, but when I become major, I will ratify this action. No, it cannot be done. Any contract which the minor enters into with regard to negotiable instruments cannot be ratified by him even when he becomes a major. So, minors cannot make themselves liable as makers, drawers, acceptors or endorsers of negotiable instruments. But they can do something else. They can draw, endorse, deliver or negotiate an instrument so as to bind other parties except themselves. See, when I am telling you that a minor is not eligible to sign a negotiable instrument, you should understand one thing. Minors are allowed to have bank accounts. They are also allowed to have checkbooks. Who signs the checkbook? The minor, if he is above the age of 10, many banks allow the child to operate the account himself. So, a child who is 12 or 13 years old or 15 years old can fill the check himself, can sign the check and hand it over to the beneficiary, or he can even go and withdraw money from the bank himself. Isn't this conflicting? When I am saying a minor cannot make a negotiable instrument, he cannot sign, he cannot draw a negotiable instrument, but he is allowed to draw checks. A check is a negotiable instrument. So, if he can sign a check, why not other negotiable instruments? See, what is relevant is the minor can draw, endorse, transfer, negotiate an instrument for binding other people. He cannot bind himself because as per law, as per contract act, as per Indian Majority Act, he cannot put any liability on himself. But he can put liability on other people. So, a minor can draw, endorse, deliver or negotiate an instrument so as to bind all parties except himself. If a minor issues a check in favor of a third person, the bank has to make payment to that third person. If suppose the payment is not made by the bank to the third party can definitely question the bank. But the third party cannot question the minor as to why I am not getting the payment. You are responsible. No. Between the bank and the third party, they are responsible to each other. The minor is not responsible. So, he is not binding himself, but he can bind the other people, the other parties to this contract. So, suppose a check is issued by A to B, or a bill of exchange is drawn by A on B favoring C. A, B, C are all majors. Nobody is a minor. C is going to receive the payment from B. B accepts to make the payment to C. Now C endorses it in favor of D. D is a minor. This is valid. Now D further endorses it to E. E is a major. This is also valid. It's not invalid. It is not against the provisions of Negotiable Instrument Act or against the provision of Indian Contract Act. Because a minor can endorse, minor can pass on the title and liability, but he cannot originate that liability. See, once again let me repeat, a minor can endorse in favor of a major and the liability passes to that major. He can transfer or negotiate and deliver the instrument to another person who is a major. There will be no liability or responsibility caused on the minor. The major parties involved are all liable to each other. So a minor can act as a channel to pass on the title and liability. Okay? See, in the Indian Contract Act, there is a provision that lunatics, mad people and drunken people, they cannot enter into contracts when they are not in the sound mind. A lunatic, a mad person is not able to understand the consequences of his actions. That is why he is known as a mad or lunatic person, a person of unsound mind. When a person is drunk, he is so drunk that he is not able to understand what he is doing. He has no control over his actions. He has no control over his tongue. He doesn't know what he is talking. Under the influence of liquor, a person loses his mental stability. Such people, during such a state, cannot enter into any contract which will cast any liability on them. So, since they cannot enter into a contract, they cannot also execute negotiable instruments. They cannot execute these negotiable instruments when they are of unstable mind. A lunatic or drunken person, as I said, is not capable of understanding the effect of the contract. He really does not know what he is doing at that particular time. He does not know that if I do so and so thing, these will be the repercussions. He doesn't understand that if I sign this document, what will happen when something goes wrong. That is why he cannot execute the negotiable instruments. Because, you know, when he is not able to understand his own actions and the consequences, repercussions of that action, his brain is like that of a child. Since he is having unstable mind, unstable, unsound mental situation, he is like a child who is not able to understand the actions and consequences. That is why he is not held responsible for his acts. Now, when he is not held responsible, we cannot hold him responsible for signing any negotiable instrument document. So, we say that let them not sign at all, let them be debarred from executing these documents. So, the Negotiable Instrument Act has taken care of all the other acts with relevance to people who can execute the documents. It lies on the Indian Contract Act basically as to who can execute the documents. So, since we saw in the beginning, a person who can enter into a contract is eligible to execute a negotiable instrument. If the person is not eligible to enter into a contract, he obviously is not eligible to execute any negotiable instrument. Now, see, as far as lunatics, that is, mad people are concerned, there are various types of madness in this world. There are people who are mad only to a certain extent, say 20%, 40%, but otherwise they can understand a few things. They cannot understand everything in toto, but they can understand a little bit of their actions. If you ask them something, they'll be able to respond. They'll be able to answer. They'll even be able to explain a few things. But there are certain other people who are totally very clear about what is happening, what is going on. But on certain days, they become totally blank. They don't know what is happening and they just do not know what they are doing. What happens is, you know, they get a bout of madness. They get an attack. And during that attack, the brain doesn't work. It goes blank and they start doing all funny things. There are many who behave like this, unnatural, erratic way, in a peculiar manner during Purnima, full moon day, or when high tide is there. That time the brain gets affected during the full moon day. So maybe, you know, like from Ekadashi to next, that 1 week, Chaturthi, you know, that 1 week they'll be having terrible influence on their brain and the brain goes blank, they are not able to understand what they're doing. The remaining 3 weeks, they are perfectly all right. So 1 week in a month, no, they can't understand anything, they are totally mad. And the remaining portion of the month, 3 weeks, they are perfectly alright, they are like normal people. So they get bouts during certain days. Now, when they are normal and they are sober, they are allowed to execute negotiable instruments. They are allowed to even enter into contracts. See, they may be from business family, they may be from trader community, or they may be people working somewhere, salaried class. Whatever people, they have their own regular routine life going on. Only during certain days, they are not able to handle themselves properly. Now, when they are normal, they carry on life in a normal way. So, during that period, they can do anything and everything which other normal people are doing. So during the period of soberness, they can definitely enter into a contract. Since they are eligible to enter into a contract, they are also eligible to sign negotiable instruments. And those instruments are very much valid in law. Only during the period of madness, during the attack period, they cannot sign any documents. They cannot enter into a contract. But when they are normal and they are of sound mind, they can sign and make the documents. But actually, this is as per law. In real practice, we prefer that these people do not execute negotiable instruments. See, in day-to-day life, if you go and take a bill of exchange from such a person, and if something goes wrong later on with regard to that bill of exchange, it will be the responsibility of the person who has to receive the money to prove that this person was normal when he signed that instrument. Jab wo check pe sign karta hai, kya hum doctor ka certificate leke aayenge ki haan ye normal tha isliye ye check usne sign kiya? We are not going to think at that time that this check may bounce and I may have to go to the court of law to file a suit against him to get the money. Aur yadi humne court mein suit file bhi kiya, he will claim that he was not of sound mind and that is why he is not responsible for the payment. Then what remedy do you have to claim money from him? Wo doctor ka certificate dikha dega, dekho main to pagal tha, I didn't know, so I am not eligible to sign this check, aapne zabardasti mujhse sign karwaya. So how are you going to prove? So that is why in practice, although law permits that he can sign documents, he can execute negotiable instruments, it is better to avoid and get it done through his legal representative when necessary. Now companies, private limited companies, public limited companies, they are also legal bodies who have a status similar to a human being. they can enter into a contract. So obviously a company, private limited or public limited, can also execute a negotiable instrument. But who is this company? If there is a private limited company, it is represented by the directors, the managing directors. If there is a public limited company, there again there are different directors, chairman and managing director or executive directors, who are authorized to do business on behalf of that company. So these companies can execute negotiable instruments. They can enter into a contract, but then there is a catch. Simply the name says, you know, XYZ private limited company, doesn't mean that they can issue checks, issue bills of exchange. They can do it only if the memorandum of association permits them to do so. So if you receive a check signed by a private limited or public limited company, just confirm that it is permitted under that memorandum of association. A private limited company, a public limited company is a legal entity. They are eligible to enter into contract. So by virtue of the definition, by virtue of Negotiable Instrument Act, they are eligible to sign negotiable instruments. They are eligible to draw bills of exchange, sign checks, make, transfer, endorse, everything is possible. But if the memorandum of association says that this cannot be done, or they cannot sign documents beyond 1 lakh, beyond 10 lakhs or beyond 1 crore, then they cannot sign such documents. They cannot do anything beyond what is permitted in the memorandum of association. Because the memorandum of association is the document which is going to say this company can do this, this can do this, 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 but they cannot do so and so activities. So if there is a bar, if there is a ban mentioned in the memorandum of association that the company cannot execute any negotiable instrument, and if still that company does sign, then the act becomes ultra vires. And the instrument is void, it has no effect, and not only that, this cannot even be ratified subsequently. If the memorandum of association has the provision to do certain things and not do certain things, that memorandum of association cannot be modified. That is why even if the company signs a document, signs a negotiable instrument which is not permitted by the memorandum of association, it cannot be ratified. So the holder of that instrument cannot make the company liable to him. The holder, the payee, the beneficiary of the bill of exchange or check cannot get any benefit. They cannot get any remedy if the company has executed a negotiable instrument which is beyond the powers given by the memorandum of association. Normally, as I said, any person who is authorized to act on behalf of the company can execute the negotiable instrument. Certain companies may say that the document should be signed jointly by any two directors. It may say that there are two managing directors and both the managing directors should sign jointly. Some companies may be having 6 or 7 directors and it may say any two director jointly, or it may say director number 2, director number 5 jointly. So whatever instructions are mentioned in the memorandum association, only those people can sign. Suppose a company has got 7 directors. And the memorandum of association states very clearly that director number 2 and director number 4 should sign the documents jointly. Suppose director number 2 has gone out of the country, he is not in India, and they have to issue a check. If director number 3 and 4 are signing, that document is not valid. It has no legal sanctity. It cannot be binding on the company. So only those who are authorized by the company to sign can execute these negotiable instruments. See, if a person is eligible to enter into a contract, as I said earlier, his agent is also permitted to do the work on his behalf. A duly authorized agent. Now, who is the agent? Agent is somebody who is working on behalf of the principal. I am doing a business, but I need support from somebody. I cannot do each and every small little thing in my business. So, I have an agent who represents me for certain actions. Or it is possible that I am doing a business in 3-4 different centers, 3-4 different cities. I have my headquarters here in Mumbai. I have a branch in Pune, I have a branch in Nagpur, and I have one branch in Nashik. For doing the day-to-day business in Nashik or Pune or Nagpur, I keep certain people there. My employees, my trustees, my trusted people. Maybe they are my relatives or close friends, whatever. I have kept them there. Now, those people will do the business on my behalf, and I become answerable for the consequences of their actions. They are doing the work on my behalf. So, they are my agents. They are my representatives. Suppose I tell them, you can sign checks on my behalf and issue them. You can sign hundis, bills of exchange on my behalf. And it is to be treated as though I have signed it. It becomes valid. So, I execute a document and tell him that these are the authorities vested in you, which you can do on my behalf. He is a duly authorized agent. I have 3 agents in 3 cities, Pune, Nashik and Nagpur. Now they are doing the work. And I have given them full authority to make, draw, accept and negotiate all the negotiable instruments on my behalf. Then whatever document is signed by these agents in these 3 places are binding on me. Because he has done this work on my behalf. As though I have myself signed these documents. This is the legal validity. But if I tell that these people are my agents only for doing day-to-day work, they cannot sign documents. They cannot sign checks. Then if due to some urgency, due to some emergent situation, they do sign, those documents are not valid. See, if the agent has mere general authority to do day-to-day business, he cannot execute negotiable instruments on behalf of that principal. Only those agents who have specific authority to make, draw, accept and negotiate the negotiable instruments can bind the principal. So, this has to be very explicit in the document made out. There is a mandate given to the agent that you are permitted to do these actions. They list out 1, 2, 3, 4. In that, if this is included, that he can sign, draw, accept and negotiate the instruments, then he can sign those negotiable instruments and the act of the agent is binding on the principal. Suppose the authorized agent signs, he has permission to execute the document and he executes. He should, while signing the bill of exchange or the check, he has to sign very clearly for and on behalf of Mr. So-and-so, agent so-and-so. If he forgets to write this, it becomes as though he has executed the document on his own behalf and he becomes personally liable. So, to avoid any complications in future, he has to make it very clear that he is signing for and on behalf of XYZ. Down below, agent into bracket, whatever his name. So, you have to ensure that the agent is a duly authorized agent and he has powers to execute negotiable instruments. In that case, those negotiable instruments are valid and he can draw all these negotiable instruments. Now, where a partnership firm is concerned. What is this partnership firm? Three or four people have come together and started doing the business. They have a common interest and they want to work for profit. They'll share the profit as per the terms and conditions specified among themselves. Now, who are these partners? They are all actually representing the firm. They are representatives of the firm. They are agents of the firm. So, what is true for agency applies to the partners also. In a partnership firm, when nothing is mentioned, any and every partner is liable to the firm. So, any one of the partners can make or draw or negotiate a negotiable instrument. Anyone can sign. The signature of any one partner is binding on all the partners. The firm per se is represented by these partners. All the partners together make one firm. So, any one partner doing something will bind the entire partnership. That means all the partners become responsible for the act of any one partner. He may or may not consult the other partners. He may or may not even ask or even know that something else is happening here, this partner is doing something. So, even without the knowledge of other partners, one partner may sign documents, but it will be binding on all the partners. Some partnership firms have sleeping partners. They are partners just for the name's sake. They are not even involved in the day-to-day business activities. But even then, if the active partner signs a check or a bill of exchange, even the sleeping partner becomes responsible. He is also answerable. He is also liable for all the consequences involved with the act of that one partner. See, as I said, every partner is a authorized agent of the firm. So, act of any one partner is binding on the firm. That is why any one partner can sign the documents. Unless it is very clearly mentioned in the partnership deed that partner A and partner B will not sign any documents on behalf of the firm. In that case, they are not permitted to sign the documents, and if they sign those negotiable instruments, then those instruments will not be valid. But this is very, very rare. It doesn't usually happen. Normally, jo partnership firm banate hain, to all partners are involved and sabhi sign karne ke liye authorized hote hain. Now, in the case of a society or club, Lions Club, Rotary Club, society, you have cooperative credit societies, housing societies, itni sare societies bane hain. There also, they have legal sanctity. They, in their names, that is in the name of the club, in the name of the society, they can enter into contracts. So, that is why they can also execute negotiable instruments. Now, if a society or a club wants to sign, who will be the person who will be signing? That will be mentioned in the bylaws. The secretary and treasurer together, the president and the secretary, these are all mentioned in the bylaws. That these are the people who are going to take care of the day-to-day activities. These are the people who can sign certain documents. These are the people who will take care of legal matters. These are the people who are going to take care of money matters. And there they will mention that Mr. So-and-so designation. Mr. So-and-so designation. They can execute documents. They can sign checks. They can sign bills of exchange. And these are all clearly mentioned in the bylaws. And these people, they are actually representing the club or the society. That means indirectly they are the agents of the society or the club. So, they are permitted to sign. Anybody who is not mentioned in the bylaws, if he signs the document on behalf of the club or society, the document is not valid. So, other people who are not permitted cannot execute negotiable instruments. Now, a trust, religious trust or say charitable trust, educational institutions. Most of the educational institutions are run by some trust. Temples, they are governed by different religious trust. they also have legal sanctity and they can file suit in their own name, they can be filed against. So when they have legal sanctity, they can also sign documents. Now, who will be the person who is signing the document? It will be mentioned in the trust deed. Those trustees who are authorized to sign. A trust may have 6 or 7 trustees, it may have 8, 10 trustees. But in the trust deed, they are going to mention trustees number 3, 4, 7. They can sign the documents. Any one or any two of these trustees can sign those documents. In that case, only those people can sign the negotiable instruments. Now, in all these cases, the person who is signing it is signing on behalf of either the partnership firm or on behalf of the society or club or on behalf of a trust. They are all actually agents of that partnership firm or society or club or trust. So, what applies to an agent, an authorized agent, applies to these cases, and that is why they can sign those negotiable instruments. See, in the case of a partnership firm, as we said, any partner can execute the negotiable instrument. Now, when he is signing the document, he has to say for and on behalf of so and so firm. And down below, he will sign and write partner. If he does not write like this, if he merely signs his signature, he becomes personally liable. And when he signs in the individual capacity without even writing for and on behalf of so-and-so firm or as partner of so-and-so firm, he is signing in individual capacity, that document, that negotiable instrument will not be binding on the firm. The firm will not be responsible for those negotiable instruments. His personal property will be attached in case of need. The firm's assets will not be attached. Now, you all know Hindu undivided family, HUF. An HUF can carry on business in the name of HUF. Who is responsible for the activities of the HUF? The Karta, the main dominant person in the family. The Karta represents the family, entire family. There will be many majors. I'm not saying only minor or wives or children. There are many majors. Joint family is there, undivided family. There are 3-4 brothers, father is there, and they're all majors. They're all doing business together. But the person who is the main person, he is the Karta, and the Karta can sign the documents. Other persons, although they are majors, they cannot sign on behalf of HUF. They are majors, they can sign in their individual capacity for their own personal assets. But for the assets of the HUF, the family business, it is only the Karta who can sign the documents, who can sign the negotiable instruments. And whatever he does, the Karta, it is binding on all the family members. They are known as co-partners. So, the act of the Karta is binding on the co-partners. It is binding on all the family members. If the other family members are signing, it will not be binding on the HUF because they are doing it in individual capacity, not on behalf of HUF. HUF, it is only the Karta who can execute. And those documents are very much valid and they are binding on the entire family. Now, suppose a person has died and there are matters to be settled on his behalf. There will be a legal representative. Somebody is appointed to take care of the estate of the person who has died. That legal representative will be signing the documents, checks or payments on behalf of the person who has died. Now, when somebody dies, the legal representative is appointed for certain matters. He is not going to be appointed for each and every action or requirement of that deceased person. The deceased person might have left some debts, payments to be done. There could be certain taxes pending to be paid. there could be certain duties remaining to be paid. Now, suppose the property in the name of the deceased person is to be transferred. Somebody has to do the transfer deed, somebody has to take care of the estate duty to be paid, somebody has to take care of all the other requirements. So, the legal representative is appointed. Now, this legal representative is permitted, authorized to sign the negotiable instruments for and on behalf of the deceased person. He is not signing in his individual capacity. He has to mention in the document very clearly for and on behalf of Mr. So-and-so into bracket deceased and down below legal representative. Now, when he is signing these negotiable instruments, when he suppose he is signing a check for the tax amount to be paid on the property tax, he cannot sign checks or instruments for any amount. He will be signing the checks only for the amount to the extent of which the assets are given to him. He has received certain assets and they have said that you take care of these things. Now, only for those he can sign those documents, and he can sign only up to that amount. He cannot go beyond this. If he does that, if he is signing a document, if he is signing a check beyond what is permitted or allowed to him, that document becomes invalid. That instrument will not be valid. So, to the extent he is receiving the assets, he can sign the documents, and he is going to sign only as legal representative for and on behalf of so and so deceased. If he is signing in the personal capacity, if he forgets to write that he is the legal representative of so and so, he becomes personally liable. Then he will have to pay from his pocket or his own account. The deceased person's account will not be attached. So that is why a legal representative has to be very careful when he is signing those documents. Now, we saw till now who are the people who can sign, who cannot sign, and if they can sign, to what extent they can sign. Now, there are some people who are totally disqualified from executing any document. Law says that these people cannot execute any contracts. Who are those people? See, there are a few categories. Like suppose a criminal who is jailed, he is in the jail. A person who is inside the jail is disqualified from entering into any contract. Convicts. A person who has been convicted, he is in the jail, he is undergoing a sentence, he is disqualified in law. So, there are, like we have also seen, minors, lunatics. Now, any person who is disqualified in law from entering into any contract cannot execute a negotiable instrument, because a negotiable instrument is indirectly a contract. So, signing a negotiable instrument means you are entering into a contract. So, if you cannot enter into a contract, you are not at all qualified to enter into a contract, then you cannot sign a negotiable instrument. Now, another example is that of an insolvent person. A person who is declared insolvent, he is not allowed to sign. He cannot sign any checks, he cannot sign any bills of exchange, because he is already declared insolvent. If he is going to sign, from where is he going to pay? Because he has no assets, he has no property, he has no wealth. So, how will he pay? So, that is why an insolvent person is not allowed to sign instruments. But suppose there is an insolvency act. In the insolvency act, they may be saying that you can sign checks for so and so purpose. Like you can pay checks for the custom duty. You have to get the goods cleared. You have done business, you have done some trading activity, manufacturing activity. Now, certain payments are pending and the assets are attached. To that extent, checks can be signed, but otherwise insolvents are not allowed to sign. In the case of insolvent, there will be an official receiver appointed, and that official receiver will be signing the checks. And that official receiver is signing the checks on behalf of this insolvent person. The insolvent person is not authorized to sign. He is disqualified. So, any person who is disqualified in law, like a minor, a convict, an insolvent, they cannot execute negotiable instruments. If at all they do sign, it is invalid ab initio. Means it has no legal sanctity. It is not a valid document at all. It has absolutely no meaning. It's a worthless paper. So friends, we have seen how negotiable instruments come into existence and who are the people who can bring these documents into existence. So these are the various people who can execute the negotiable instruments, and those who are not permitted to sign these documents cannot sign at all. They cannot execute these negotiable instruments. Okay? Thank you very much.